Today, French envoys established contact with German representatives to receive Hitler's peace terms. In Bordeaux, the temporary French capital, Premier Pétain repeated that France was defeated and must give up the war. Hostilities have not yet stopped, however, and the battered French armies are retiring before the German advance. We bring you another European roundup. Take you first to Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Theodore Knaut speaking from Berlin. France has appointed her delegates to meet the Germans and receive the terms of surrender. They are General Hunsinger, Ambassador Noel, Vice Admiral Leluc, and General Bergeret of the Air Forces. On account of the difficulty of communication with Bordeaux via Spain, the French message did not reach Berlin until 1 o'clock this morning, and it was forwarded to Adolf Hitler at his headquarters at 4 o'clock a.m. The German High Command at once made the necessary arrangements to receive the French armistice delegation. The remains of the French armies are now divided into four groups, cut off from one another and each disintegrating. In Brittany, the Canadian troops re-embarked 2 days after their landing without their having come into action at all. Only a small French group remains, and the Germans have now taken Brest, the great naval base, and therewith reached the Atlantic Ocean. The armies that had fought in the defense of Paris are south of the River Loire, and which Orléans, with the important crossing, is in German hands. A third group is in the valley of the River Rhône, where the Germans are approaching Lyon, the second largest city in France. The French armies manning the Maginot Line and the fortresses in Alsace and Lorraine, every last one of which now seems to have been captured, are being pressed together more and more. The only real resistance is around the Maginot Line on both sides of Thionville. This brief outline of the present military situation was given in tonight's Deutsche Allgemeine Zeitung. It is supplemented by the report of today's German communique. Brest has been captured, but nothing is said about French warships that might have been there. The Loire has been reached and crossed from Nantes to Tours. This means that it no longer affords protection to the main group of French armies south of it. The Germans have crossed the River Cher and are in pursuit of the French via Bourg. In northern Lorraine, the remnants of the French eastern forces are being pressed together along the Moselle between Toul and Epinal, both of which fortresses are in German hands, and in the northern and central part of the Vosges Mountains. The Maginot Line around Thionville is still fighting. The line has again been broken through at its eastern end near the Rhine at Weissenburg. South of the Vosges Mountains, German troops coming from the east and from the west have united and are driving the French north into the mountains. More than 200,000 prisoners were taken by the Germans yesterday, including the commander of the French 10th Army. Attacks on England by the German air forces are increasing. Yesterday, they were directed at flying fields and oil depots at the mouth of the Thames. Today, it is reported that the nitrate plant at Billingham, B for Benjamin, Illinghamme, which is an important part of the British armament industry, was bombed, as well as oil depots at Hull. The fire is said to have been visible at a distance of 30 miles. It is expressly stated in the communique that these attacks on English military objectives are in reprisal for British attacks on open German cities. The attack on England, the final German objective in this war, may be considered to have begun. Attacks from the air launched from the extended coastline which the Germans have in hand, from the North Cape to Brest, are paving the way for the attempt to occupy what an air arm can only attack. The Germans lost no time in starting their drive on France the moment Dunkirk had fallen. Now France is on the point of surrender, and they are as prompt in beginning their serious effort at subjugating England. No doubt the terms on which Germany will receive the surrender of the French armies in the continent will soon be known. That will end one more phase of this war, which has been so entirely favorable to the German arms to date. The period of occupation will begin when France will have to be administered by Germans and Italians, as Belgium and Holland, Denmark and Norway and Poland are being administered by Germans today. This is Theodore Knaut speaking from Berlin and returning you to NBC.
This is NBC in New York, and here's a bulletin from the Associated Press here in the NBC newsroom in New York. Washington, President Roosevelt took steps to form a coalition cabinet today by nominating Colonel Frank Knox to be Secretary of the Navy and Henry L. Stimson to be Secretary of War. Knox, publisher of the Chicago Daily News, was Republican vice presidential candidate in 1936. Stimson was Secretary of State in the Hoover administration and Secretary of War under President Taft. The submission of the nominations was accompanied by a White House announcement, without amplification, that Secretary Woodring had resigned his cabinet portfolio effective on Senate confirmation of the nomination of his successor. More news later. And now continuing, we take you to the British capital. Go ahead, London.
This is London at about 6:58. Fred Bates speaking. It is reported here that the French plenipotentiaries have already left the designated meeting place and are on their way back to Bordeaux. The House of Commons went into secret session at 4:00, nearly 3 hours ago. Last Tuesday, the Prime Minister made it clear in the House that he felt this to be no time for recriminations. Only the present and future counted. The past could be left to the historians, he said. But Mr. Lloyd George said then that many members had suggestions to make which could not be made in open session. He hoped the Prime Minister would not consider it a breach of faith if the members went beyond the question of home defense. Some circles have talked for weeks now about the possibility of Mr. Lloyd George being offered a cabinet post. The Liberal News Chronicle said yesterday there's a growing feeling at Westminster that the government should be strengthened at once, and by including Lloyd George. Again today, similar reports appear, despite Mr. Winston Churchill's statement last Tuesday when he said, "It is absolutely necessary at a time like this that every minister who tries each day to do his duty shall be respected, and that their subordinates must know that their chiefs are not threatened men." He added, "men who are here today and gone tomorrow." I say despite this statement because, coupled with the inclusion of Mr. Lloyd George, there is continued demand that those who were associated with responsibility for war preparation in the past and who still remain should go. At any rate, it appears that a group of 50 members of Parliament have outlined plans for Britain's home defense. In the form of 8 resolutions, these plans have been submitted to the Prime Minister. This group expects them to be examined at the secret session today. They are said to include a plan for enrolling the whole population for defense, a special minister for fifth column of spy activities, and even a foreign legion. One measure which will be supported is the division of the entire population into 2 categories, producers and non-producers. The non-producers to be constantly available for defense. If the voluntary system fails in a week, immediate compulsory measures are proposed. How interesting it is to find a proposal in 1940, which goes way back to the division of males into workers and fighters. It was believed that Mr. Lloyd George would review the whole war situation today, would query the government's international policy, and would make suggestions. Many members of Parliament seem to be impressed by the resignation of the Parliamentary Secretary to the Ministry of Finance in Northern Ireland. His resignation, it is said, was due to his believing that Lord Craigavon's government has failed to appreciate the danger of invasion. The British government has now announced an official plan to send around 20,000 children to Canada and the other dominions. The first parties are expected to leave here in 2 weeks, and the ships will probably be convoyed. According to reports, the offices of the Children's Overseas Reception Board have been inundated today by thousands of people anxious to register their children for evacuation to the dominions under this scheme. There are reports of queues 4 deep around the square in which the offices are situated. It has now been stated that applications should be made in writing. The scheme covers children between the ages of 5 and 16. According to a Japanese Foreign Office communique today, France has agreed to curtail supplies through French Indochina to General Chiang Kai-shek. The report adds that Japanese officials are to be allowed to investigate conditions on the spot. The French ambassador is reported to have told the Japanese foreign minister that since June 17th, the French government had banned the transportation of such things as petrol and trucks to China. Other goods covering a very wide range will now come under this ban in view of the Japanese government's representations to France. A Japanese Foreign Office spokesman is reported to have said the Japanese Navy upholds without qualification the stand taken by the Foreign Office on this question. it is understood that four age groups will be called up here for military service in July instead of three, as had been expected. There will be men aged between 31 and 34, and with these four registrations completed, the total number of men liable to be called up for service will be over 4 million. A report from the War Office says that large contingents of Australian and New Zealand forces disembarked at a British port today and are being sent to their concentration areas. Messages from the King and the War Minister were read to the men on arrival. We return you now to the National Broadcasting Company, New York.
We have just heard NBC war reporters broadcasting the news direct from the German and from the British capitals. Now for the news in our own nation's capital.
This is Earl Godwin in Washington, and if you were listening 5 minutes ago, you heard the New York announce the bulletin from Washington. In a move for a coalition cabinet, President Roosevelt today appoints Henry L. Stimson as Secretary of War to succeed Harry Woodring, whose resignation has just been accepted, and at the same time names Frank Knox as Secretary of the Navy. This is the most amazing cabinet break in years. The President has long wanted to make a change in the war portfolio, but he has been hampered by friendship for Harry Woodring, who simply would not resign. No one yet has suggested that the President would offer the post to Taft's war secretary, who happened to be Herbert Hoover's state secretary, and the coalition cabinet idea had almost been forgotten. Ever since the international situation became critical and the national defense program put into high gear, it has been predicted, though, that the President would make changes in the war and Navy posts. Here he selects two outstanding Republicans while the Republicans are gathering in Philadelphia, trying at this minute to frame an anti-New Deal, anti-Roosevelt platform. Mr. Roosevelt further confirms today the report that he plans to form a nonpartisan defense cabinet. Stimson and Knox both have been outspoken in their approval of the President's foreign policy and his $5 billion one-year preparedness program. Of course, there are already two Republicans in the cabinet, Roosevelt cabinet, that is, they wore Republican labels up to the 1932 campaign. One of them is Henry Wallace, Secretary of Agriculture, and the other is Secretary of Interior Harold L. Ickes. Politically, the nominations today are quite likely to interfere with or take the wind from the sails of the Republicans gathered at Philadelphia to frame that platform. With the Republicans over there trying to point for appeasement, here they have the number two leader of their latest campaign, Mr. Knox, now in the New Deal cabinet and also with a cabinet officer from two previous Republican administrations. Washington believes that the Republicans in Philadelphia will have some difficulty in framing the kind of platform they started out with. Recently, Stimson made a speech over these facilities. Here are 4 or 5 points from his speech. We should repeal our neutrality measure. Second, we should throw open our ports to the British, French, naval, merchant marine for all repairs. Third, we should accelerate by every means the sending of planes and other munitions to Britain and France. Fourth, we should refrain from being fooled by the evident bluff of Hitler's so-called fifth column movements in South America. And fifth, we should open our lands as a refuge to Great Britain's refugees. And six, we should every one of us combat the defeatist arguments being made in this country as to the unconquerable power of Germany. That was quotations from Henry L. Stimson's most recent speech. Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's all from Washington at this moment.
During the past quarter hour, you have heard on-the-spot reports from NBC war reporters in Europe and Earl Godwin in Washington, D.C. Your dial is now set for the latest news on the war. NBC will continue to bring its listeners broadcasts from its newsmen at home and abroad, as well as the latest bulletins. This is the National Broadcasting Company.